I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan. And this is the Money Basics Podcast.
A podcast where we discuss money, budgeting, investing, and everything in between.
And if you like this podcast, please rate, subscribe, and share. Every little bit counts, and we don't grow without you. I want to start today's episode off with...
That was the start? That's what we're starting
with? What do you want to start with?
All right, let's go. We'll do it live.
Welcome back, and I just want to do it different this time, okay? All right,
I'm in.
I'm tired of saying welcome back. Nobody cares.
You're right. I'm all in.
All right, cool. In previous episodes of Money Basics, we talked a lot about banks and banks that we like as a consumer and as an investor. And one of those banks that we've touted as recommended by us is Simplii Financial. Well, we've got news for you, listeners. That bank is now on the blacklist.
I'll go that far, but it's like at the bottom of the, like, you should maybe look at it list. It's the very bottom of that list.
All right, well, listen, we'll let you judge the listener, and I'll tell you the very quick version of this story. Now, Simplii Financial, as a lot of banks have done, have thrown out promotional interests on their high interest savings accounts, okay? And most banks have fine print. Simplii is no different, was no different. They had a promotional rate for a six-month period or whatever it was. They said from, you know, whatever the month was to whatever the month was with a specific date. So Mel and I moved all of our savings, which wasn't that much, but still a sum of money, into said account for said period during the first trial dates or the first promotional period date. And we received our promotional interest, all fine and dandy. I had read the fine print. I read the emails. I double confirmed with an agent that time because I wasn't sure about trusting the banks. And it all went through fine. We got our interest, and we were all happy. Now, after that was over, we were thinking about where do we move our money to now. And Simplii just coincidentally came out with another promotional rate, and it was around the same. I think it was a little bit more, but around the same high interest for another six-month period. So we moved our money into that. We transferred all of our money out from the high interest savings account because they say new deposits, right? So we moved all our money to literally EQ Bank, and then we transferred it back into Simplii Financial. Okay. So we withdrew the money and deposited it back in to hit that new deposit. Okay. We go through the entire interest period. Dan, you did the same thing.
I did.
Dan says after the 6 months or whatever the period was, I got my interest and I got this much. And I was like, wow, that's cool. I didn't get mine yet. We must be getting it soon. A couple days goes by and we didn't get anything. And Mel's starting to get pretty pissed. So I called and I was like, hey, we didn't get our promotional interest yet. The girl says to me, the Simplii Financial representative was like, at the end of the month, you'll get it because it just sort of goes that way. And sometimes it takes a little bit. So I'm like, okay, cool. So we waited till the end of the month. Still nothing. We got the regular interest, which was peanuts. So then I called again. And basically the agent at the time that I talked to said, well, you missed it, more or less. He didn't really give me a concrete explanation, but basically somehow we screwed up the timeline and they weren't going to pay us the interest because that's our fault. And if we wanted to get that interest or receive a promotional interest, that there was one going on right now that we could put our money into and sign up for.
Yeah, sure. So they can screw you again.
But that's exactly what I thought. So here we are. Now listen, maybe to some people, this wouldn't be that big of a deal. Honestly, we only had a few thousand dollars in there. My interest would have maybe at the most been $100, but nonetheless, I feel like I could have left my money at EQ the minimum. And EQ would have at least paid me the 2.5%
that they promised. I think it's three now.
Okay. Either way, I know and they pay it monthly, whereas Simplii you have to wait till the end of the period for them to pay it out.
Which is annoying as hell.
Exactly. So the fact that they're not transparent, they got me on the fine print somehow.
Yeah. Which, think about this from a bank. Imagine you were like the creator, the founder, the CEO of your own bank, and you're just trying to like be the best bank you can be, you know, get... you know, good customer relationships, all this stuff. Is nicking people for $100 on the fine print, is that really the best way to build a client relationship? Because now Jordan's here on a podcast telling our 3 million listeners that Simplii Financial sucks and that they're not good to do business with and that they're going to screw you on the fine print. You know what I mean? Like, if they just did the right thing, they were open and honest and transparent, like, and even if they did screw that up and Jordan called and explained this, like, Why didn't they just say, like, yeah, listen, you missed the date, but because you're a valued client, we'll give you your $100.
Yeah.
Because you missed it by, like, a fucking day. Excuse my language, children.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there's more to this story because I then receive an email after my call, and the email says, please give us your feedback.
Oh, big mistake.
Well, now, I'm sure their intention was give us the feedback on your experience with the agent, and I have nothing against said agent, although, yes, maybe... I don't know what their script is. Maybe he doesn't even have that in his script to say to offer this. And maybe I could have escalated it. But honestly, at that point, I had a sour taste in my mouth. I didn't want to deal with this anymore. So I said in this feedback form that I basically ripped them a new one. I was like, you guys are, you know, doing deals in bad faith. And we missed the deal because of fine print that I thought I had read, but apparently not. But I feel like I'm been jaded or whatever. I specifically said in my feedback form that we've held a mortgage with Simply for, by the time our term's done, it'll be almost 10 years.
Wow.
And I said, I'm going to shop elsewhere with my mortgage. I said, you might not care so much about a couple $1,000 and $100 of interest, but you might care about a $300,000 mortgage. So fuck off. And guess what?
This is going to be the explicit episode.
Guess what?
What?
Nothing in return.
They don't care.
Nothing in return. No email, no nothing, even acknowledging anything.
Yep.
And Mel even submitted her feedback as well on a separate, she didn't make the call or anything. She went and explicitly went to their feedback, whatever, on their website and sent her own version of the said complaint. And again, nothing. No reaching out, nobody, no, not even an email.
Brutal.
So I don't know how your sentiments are still here, but I'll finish up my thing. Blacklist. I hate Simply. Do not bank with them. They suck.
So yeah, like, it's that is dealing in bad faith, and some could argue, well, you should have read the fine print. But by contrast, some of their competitors who we do actually like, so look at EQ Bank, where they pay you monthly. So Jordan could have identified within month one if there was an issue and could have dealt with it then, rather than waiting the full 6 months and only then finding out, oh, something's wrong here. You know what I mean? So like EQ Bank, right away, they deal with it better than Simply does. And even better than that, another option is Wealthsimple, who pays a very good interest rate, 4% or 4.5% if you have a few extra conditions met. But they actually give you a tally of the interest earned by the day. So like by day two or three, Jordan could have probably realized like, hey, this doesn't look right. Could have ran the math, realized he wasn't getting the promotional interest and contacted them and fixed this before wasting 6 months. Now, you might be thinking like, okay, Jordan, chill. It's $100 over 6 months. But I'm with Jordan on this. The amount doesn't really matter. It's just, it's about dealing in good faith, right? And, you know, by contrast, if that was me, I was in the same promotional deal and it happened to work out for me. But if it didn't, I would have blown an absolute gasket because I've got a huge, like, we'll call it my mortgage fund saved up. I have a huge cash position that I'm setting aside and I'm bouncing it around from these high interest rates in order to stop losing it to inflation until mortgage renewal. So like for me at that promotional rate, I forget what it was, but it was something in the ballpark of $1,000. And if I missed out on that because of some fine print, I would have absolutely blown a gasket. So yeah, I see where you're at. I still have Simply. My cash is actually parked there right now on that second promotional rate. And they actually do pay this one. The first time was like you, they didn't pay it till the end of the 6 months. You just got there because what they break it down to like a normal interest rate, which is like a quarter of a percent, it's nothing. And you get that monthly, but that promotional rate, you don't see until the end of your term, the 6 months or whatever it is. But this time around, I actually get two interest payments every month and it'll label it the normal interest rate. So it's like, for me, it's like a couple bucks. And then the promotional interest rate, which is like $200, and it labels them as such. So seems like they've kind of stepped it up a little bit, but still, it's not as transparent as you'd like it to be. I think a good bank would do like Wealthsimple does, where they just show you by the day what you've accrued. They don't pay it out every day, but they show you like you've earned this much, and that helps you keep tabs on it. Simply, we initially went with, at least on our end, Sabrina and I went with Simply because it had all the things that we would need from like a day-to-day bank, meaning we've got access to ATMs for withdrawal and deposit. You could deal through like CIBC systems to get all the things you need. But the big thing for us actually was checks. And at the time, no other free online bank had the capability of doing checks, which you might think is not a big deal, but we were in the process of buying our house together. And there's like chimps going to the lawyers and stuff. And I forget, but there was a couple times we needed checks. And I could see that potentially, like maybe like, you know, once every 3 or 4 years, I might need a check. But if I'm not mistaken now, I think EQ Bank does checks. And I wouldn't be surprised if Wealthsimple does checks. Some of these banks do. I don't remember who it is, but somebody's doing them now. Because Sabrina and I were reevaluating. She wants to get rid of Simplii as well. And we could not find an excuse to not get rid of Simplii. Like, our other banks, EQ and Wealthsimple, can cover all of her needs.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned that because that's next on my list. I like EQ. EQ and Wealthsimple. So, we Mel and I have made the decision that we have a system where we use a joint account, and we would like to remain in that system because we feel it works really well for us. EQ Bank does not currently offer that, and Wealthsimple doesn't either. But Wealthsimple has, I can't remember if it was an email or a messaging or a call, but either way, they've communicated to Mel because Mel inquired about joint accounts, and they said it would be coming soon. So there was
EQ does not have joint accounts?
That's right.
Yes, they do.
Do they?
So that's why Sabrina and I went with EQ.
Really?
Yeah, it's very easy too. You can have multiple joint accounts. We do. We have a separate joint account for house expenses. We have another one for RSP stuff. Yeah, super easy.
Okay, then I had that backwards then. Well, there's a reason. There's a reason why we're not going with EQ. Well, maybe I should look into that. Anyway, we decided that we were going to go with Wealthsimple, the Wealthsimple cash account, once they offer the joint accounts, after our mortgage is up for renewal, because we're going to basically switch everything at the same time. But now that I am informed otherwise about EQ, I might open that door up to EQ because I miss using EQ as my daily banker. One of the things I really liked it is at like and liked when I was using it is the using the bank card at any ATM. So it doesn't, maybe not a big deal to you or other people, but I just liked it because, like, with Simplii, which is what I use right now and that I want to get away from, and I don't know how Wealthsimple works with this. You have to go to a CIBC. Now, where I live, I only have two, and they're at each end of town. And sometimes that's annoying. When I had my EQ bank card, I went to like a TD one time because it was right near me. I went to, there's a BMO that's in Ingleside right where I live. I like walked there, grabbed 20 bucks that I needed. I went to the gas station one time and just used like a shitty like ATM.
$5 fee ones.
They reimbursed me every time.
So you say any ATM.
Yeah, I went to, I needed.
I used mine recently too in Portugal, no fees.
Yeah. So, I might, there's a reason though. I'm going to talk to Mel and see what, there was a reason why we didn't want to go with EQ for some reason. Anyway, but she's super pumped about Wealthsimple because she does like the feature where it shows you the daily interest. The 4.5% is nice. Because she's doing auto,
the robo
payroll deposit.
She's
doing payroll deposit.
Yeah. So the deal with Wealthsimple is you get 4% interest on all deposits. But if you have over 100 grand between like all your investments and everything within Wealthsimple, they'll give you an extra 0.5. And then also if you do, it's auto deposit, like if you deposit your paycheck automatically. But I think it's also billing too. If you do billing, anyways, if you set up certain automated features, they'll give you an extra 0.5%.
Yeah, which is sweet.
Yeah, Wealthsimple is very, very cool. The one thing Are you over this topic? Because I got a gripe on sort of on the banking front too.
The other thing that we like too about EQ and Wealthsimple is the cash back using their cards.
Yeah, can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, which is nice. And I think Mel likes the cash back setup on Wealthsimple more than EQ.
Why is that?
I don't remember.
Maybe is it more? Maybe.
Maybe. All right. Well, you do your gripe. I'm going to shoot her a text.
Yeah. So my gripe. So recently, Sabrina and I were kind of. Sort of juggling some future planning, I guess, with, you know, pensions, retirement planning, that sort of stuff. And so she's self-employed. She doesn't have a pension, right?
Yeah.
And I've got a pretty good pension. So in retirement, I'll likely have a pretty solid income, which means lots of tax if I have like an RSP versus Sabrina. She's basically creating her own pension. So it just makes sense for us to create a spousal RSP and for me to contribute my room to her RSP. So we're looking at setting this up. I'm finding that a spousal RSP is a difficult thing to set up in Canada. There's not a lot of great options and not everyone does it. All the big institutions do it, but all the big institutions suck. And a lot of them charge fees or they got stupid rules or they're just not good, you know? Wealthsimple has spells of RSPs, but it's the robo-advisor only. Yeah. I don't like it. The performance isn't great. The fees are a little high. It's not a terrible option, but I'm a very confident and competent self-investor. I feel like I could do better and do it my way with less fees. So I'd like to do it myself, but they don't offer that. So I had to look elsewhere. So I found a free one, because all I want to do is ETF investing. Nothing fancy, just automated investments every 2 weeks into a couple of ETFs and just let it ride for like 30 years and check on it then, you know? So I found that Questrade does free ETF trade. There'd be no fees if I did ETFs exactly what I'm doing. There'd be no fees.
That's right.
Cool. That sounds like a great option. They got great reviews and everyone's like, oh, they're a great broker. So I go on the website and I start trying to open this Spousal RSP. Oh my God, is this complicated. I first opened up an account and I had it backwards. I like got 3/4 of the way through opening up a Spousal RSP for Sabrina to contribute her room to me. And I'm like, oh wait, I finally realized what I'd done. I'm like, no, I want the reverse of that. So I had to like shut down the account, start over. And I'm like, okay, so strike one. They didn't make that very clear. It was super confusing. So then finally I did it properly. I get it launched and they want me to submit like 5 different like paper documents that I have to like print, sign, scan, send back. And I'm like, what the hell is this? The 1800s? Like, should I send it by carrier pigeon? Do you remember doing that with EQ Bank or Wealthsimple?
No.
It's all just click, 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 click. You don't, why am I printing shit? So anyways, whatever. I filled the paperwork. And once again, there's very little direction and it's kind of complicated.
I do remember mom when she was buying her GICs and transfer money to EQ.
That was because of transfer, though.
She had to sign some stuff and send it, and she was confused, although...
Yeah, but that's a transfer. I'm just trying to open an account here. I wasn't trying to transfer anything. So I fill out all the paperwork. I scan it. I send it in, and then I got to wait a couple of days for them to review it or whatever. Comes back, says it's rejected. I'm like, what do you mean it's rejected? So I look into it. It's rejected because I filled out the paperwork improperly. So like, oh, okay. Well, it was confusing. I could see now that would happen. So I get on the text chat with the agent on the chat bot thing. And she tells me, okay, yeah, you filled out this section and you didn't need to. You have to fill out this different section. Okay, no big deal. So I do exactly what this lady says and I resubmit it, rejected again. Now I'm fuming. I did exactly what you said, right? So I fill it out a third time. So now like we're a month into this that I've been trying to set this freaking thing up. When EQ Bank Wealthsimple, I set up in like 5 minutes, you know? So finally the third time I get all this crap filled out again and I send it in. And then now I've been waiting, it's a week. I just sent that in yesterday. So I'll have to wait probably till Tuesday or Wednesday by the time they process it. Anyways, it's just so much hassle and it's so freaking annoying. And then looking at their platform and the system, how it works, it's not user-friendly. Yeah, it's sort of confusing. And then like looking at, it's like borderline threatening. I'm like trying to figure out, cause I can still see all the platform. I just don't have the ability to do it. I can see it. Right. So I'm looking at like, okay, so how would I fund this account once I'm approved that I'm good to go? And it's like, okay, I can see how I would fund it, but then there's a warning. It's like only the owner of this account can fund it. Otherwise it's, you know, whatever, you're going to break these rules, getting all this trouble. And I'm like, but it's a Spousal RSP. Like I want to put money in Sabrina's name. But it sounds like I'm going to get in trouble for it. So I messaged the online chat bot. She's like, oh, no, you can just ignore that. And I'm like, I feel like...
Then why is it there?
Yeah. And also, you've already misled me in the past on that paperwork. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so... Anyways, I'm about to throw in the towel on Questrade. But the problem is there's not a lot of good options out there.
Did you check out Interactive Brokers?
No, I did not. My next to look into is actually National Bank. There's a slight fee. But once you get more than like 20 grand of deposits, they waive the fee. And I think I could get that because just the way we're going to auto deposit, like I'm not putting a lump sum in, like by year two, at some point I would have, or maybe at the end of year two, I would have that 20,000 of deposits, or maybe it was year three. I forget. But anyways, eventually the fees wouldn't be there anymore. So I think we might do that, but yeah, I'll keep looking.
Nice. So I agree with you with Questrade. So I opened up my first, broker was Questrade because I wanted to buy Trueleaf was my first stock that I bought. And it wasn't available in Wealthsimple at the time. So I opened up a Questrade account. Actually, I opened up a Questrade account well before I was ready to invest because I just wanted to, there was a trial. You could go in there and play with it for a bit without actually using any real money. So I was playing around with it, and I do find it confusing. And at the time, it was even more confusing. They actually updated it since and made it simpler.
Yeah.
But I still find it, like, compared to Wealthsimple, where it's, like, idiot-proof.
Yeah.
Wealthsimple's so easy.
Yeah. That's good.
Quest Trade is a little more. Now, I understand why some people might like that, because it has extra features and there's some other things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about that stuff, yeah. So it means nothing to me. But yeah, I agree with you. It does seem, and I don't remember ever sending in documents, but I do remember opening up accounts was like, because I actually opened up, I opened up an RRSP by mistake, and I just kept it, but I never funded it. And do they, you still have to fund, I don't know if you've gotten, obviously you haven't opened up an account yet, but is the way to fund it, you have to do it like basically an e-transfer?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. It had to be like a minimum 1,000 to start.
That's, yeah. Anyway, so like, for those who don't know, like Wealthsimple, you literally, it's almost like Amazon.
Yeah.
You hit a button, it's like deposit money from which account? Your bank account that you've already linked? Yes. Boom, money, pow, like three clicks, you got money in there.
And if you want to start investing, like you can fund your account with like $1. You could invest 50 cents of that dollar into a fractional share if you want. Like,
yeah.
They took all the roadblocks and just moved them out of the way for you.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be.
Whereas Quest Trade, I had to transfer money, basically like an e-transfer from my bank. And it took like a day for it to like deposit. It wasn't ready instantly. Yeah, there's just some roadblocks.
Yeah, Wealthsimple, if you do like a huge deposit, there'll be a delay, but they give you quite a bit. It's like, don't quote me, but something like $5,000 or $8,000 immediately.
Pretty sure it's 15 up to 15,000.
You think so?
Yeah, I remember doing it not that long ago, and they said get.
One thing I noticed though, I moved my huge cash stash from Simply to Wealthsimple Cash to get that 4.5%, and there was a delay because it was a big chunk of money. But they still paid me the interest on that delayed money.
Nice.
Like I couldn't buy stock with it or anything.
Nice.
But I could see the interest going up and it showed the money there, but it just said like pending or whatever.
And I have to give Wealthsimple credit because they've advanced a lot. You've been with them longer, but even just with me being with them, I remember when I first started with them, minimum that you could get ready available right away was $200.
That's right. Yeah.
Now it's like I said, $15,000. Like it's
yeah.
Great. They've really like moved those roadblocks out of the way, like you said.
Yeah, they're stepping up big time. I'm tempted actually, now that you've told me that Mel reached out to them about some feet joint accounts and they said it was coming.
Yeah.
Maybe I should reach out to them and see if they got spousal RSPs coming.
Yeah.
Like self-directed.
So speaking of Mel, she texted me back. So with Wealthsimple, the 1% cash back. So it is a little bit more than EQ.
EQ is 0.5.
Yeah. And she says it's instant in your account.
Cool. There's so like no... you spend the money and the cash back falls into the account.
Yeah.
Well, EQ is at the end of the month, I think, right? Yeah. Or like after a month is complete.
That's right. She also writes that EQ holds deposits for 5 days and it's not updated instantly. Which I remember because we did that. Yeah, that's true. And Wealthsimple is super transparent, shows you everything. You don't have to wait until the end of the month. Yeah. So there we have it, folks.
Yeah, but both of those, by my opinion, are both great options.
Yeah.
Like, I shouldn't even say, I use them both pretty much equally for different purposes, but I use them both equally at the same time. They're nice. Both great companies.
Okay. So that's going to wrap it up for me in terms of banks.
Yeah, me too. That was my gripe with the Questrade thing.
Cool.
Not a good start.
No. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Well, and yeah, like I said, I have my own, like, I don't have any problems per se with Questrade, but certainly not as user-friendly as Wealthsimple for sure for me. Okay, so we're going to sort of move on to quite a different topic right now. So you and I had a conversation not too long ago on one of our group chats. So the way my portfolio is going right now, I have this thing about I don't ever want to average my average price up. Okay. So when I get money that I want to invest in my tax-free savings account, I typically will look for the companies that I own that are down. That I still have confidence.
Yeah. So just for the beginner investor, for those who haven't invested and are curious, when he says average up, he means like, let's say he bought a stock for $30 a share a year ago. And since then it's gone up in price. It's $35 a share. Still a great company. He still really likes the company. But if he, like right now, because he purchased it at $30 a share, that's like his base level price of that. It shows you bought this at $30 a share. That is your average price because you made one purchase at $30 a share. If he buys it now in the future that it's gone up at $35 per share, it's the system's going to do the math in the background, and it's going to change his average price from $30 a share to, depending on how much money he throws in, maybe now it's like $32 per share. So there's like an old adage in investing. It's like buy low, sell high, right? So a lot of people get sort of an aversion to doing this averaging up thing that we're talking about because you're kind of buying high. You know what I mean? Like the stock's on a run, it's going up. You're not buying low, you're buying high. So that's sort of what he's talking about.
Yeah. So to put it into context, like let's say I bought a company at $10 a share and I bought one share mm-hmm. to keep it simple. And the company is now worth $20. But I still really like the company and I buy two shares now at $20. Well, my average price is going to go up significantly.
Yeah.
Because of the lower amount of shares that I have. Yeah. Now, it'll be a little different if I had like 1,000 shares at $10 and I bought 50 shares at $20, and my average won't go up as fast, yeah, so right?
A little bit.
So, but the same is true with companies that are down. So that's where I'm having struggles. And I'll give you the floor in a minute because I want you to answer this for me. So like I was saying, I have companies that are down that I don't think I want to put any more money into right now. So the US weed stocks is a good example. Although they've been on a bit of a tear, but they're still down for me. And it's just not something I want to put into money into right now as compared to other companies. So one that I really have a lot of conviction with that I am down like 2% on is TD Bank. I would love to just drive more money in there, drive my price down 2%. Because the more you drive your price down, the average price down, the more the stock potentially goes up, the more money you're going to make because you've brought your average buy down.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, you had said when I was talking about some of the companies, we had mentioned, you know, there was like Bell, TELUS, CIBC, TD, Canadian Tire, RioCan, and Smart Centers. I'm all down on pretty much all of which I wouldn't mind putting more money in. And you were talking about specifically the Brookfields.
Yeah, full disclaimer, I'm like a Brookfield Super Bowl, so I could be biased, but I love the Brookfields.
Yeah. And I don't disagree with anything that you're saying. However, my Brookfields, as compared to the companies I just mentioned, are up, actually both now 20%. I checked yesterday. Now, and I also have very small, now this is another factor, I have very small positions in the Brookfields. So one, I would like larger positions. And two, if I start averaging my price up, it won't take me long to get to this higher price as compared to where I bought it a month ago. So you had said, don't water your weeds. And you said there was another part to that.
Yeah. So it's, you're cutting your flowers and watering your weeds.
That's right.
That's an express. I didn't make that up. It's a common expression in the investing world.
Yeah. So can you elaborate? I want you to explain this to me so that I don't feel, I don't know, like I'm not doing the right thing.
So the cutting the flowers part, you're not really doing that. Cutting the flowers would be like, imagine you own two stocks. Let's take an example. You own Brookfield and let's say Canadian Tire. Okay. I don't know if this is true. It's just hypothetical. Let's say you're way up on Brookfield and you're down a little bit on Canadian Tire. And by your logic, you're like, well, I would like to average down and I don't like averaging up. So the cutting the flowers part would be if you sold some of your winner, some of your Brookfield, and then took the proceeds, the gains from that sale and poured it into the stock you were down on Canadian Tire. Mm. That concept would be cutting your flower, which is selling your winner, to put more into your loser, which is watering your weeds. Mm. So you're not selling, you're not cutting the flower, you're not selling the winners, but you are in a sense watering the weeds. Now that's not like a fair blanket statement to say. There are times when a stock that's down can be a very good stock and there's an opportunity presenting itself and it might make a lot of sense to jump on that opportunity. But if you like, this is why it's important to look at earnings and company performance and potential catalysts in the future. If there's usually a reason why stocks are down, right? And that reason could be a good reason or it could be a bad reason. Like a bad reason would be the company's posted terrible earnings. They're doing very poorly. They're making less and less money every quarter, every year. They're losing customers. Their debt's increasing. All these bad things.
Cineplex,
exactly. A prime example. If you're seeing something like that, okay, sure, the stock price is going down. That doesn't mean you should put a bunch of money into it because it's not guaranteed to come back up. More bad stuff can happen. The stock is down in that case because the company is terrible, right? I haven't looked specifically at Cineplex, but I really do believe they're probably not great.
Very, I'm surprised they're alive.
Yeah, versus You know, the flip side of that is like, look at a Brookfield. Let's say Brookfield Infrastructure, for example. There's a bunch of different Brookfields. I like them all, but infrastructure, I just have a lot of special interest in, I guess. It's just a very fascinating firm. They are growing their earnings aggressively. They're making more and more money every quarter, and they're creating more cash flow, like a super aggressive amount every quarter, every year. And they're rolling that into more dividends for us as the shareholder and bigger growth and bigger projects for the company so that in the future they'll make even more money, right? So it's like this really fantastic thing. So even if the stock is way up on these Brook on this Brookfield company, like it's not necessarily a bad idea to buy it, even if it's high. There's a reason that thing is like a runaway train, you know, it's moving for a reason. So sometimes it makes sense to even buy into that momentum, assuming the company's performing and firing on all cylinders. Now, this once again isn't good blanket advice. There's no such thing as blanket advice in the stock world. But just in concept, it's what's more important is the performance of the company. This whole price averaging up, averaging down, this is just your psychology. It means nothing. It's just your emotional interpretation of the numbers that you're seeing. It means nothing in relation to the company performance. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it doesn't help me at all though. So what I'm doing now is I don't. So we're doubling our RESP payments. We're putting like $900 a month almost into our RESP. So like it's really tying up our free cash. Not putting much into my TFSA. I might average $100 a month, maybe. But I am taking my dividend payments, and I typically will put them into my down companies because I'm trying to average down little by little. And it's been working. Like TD is an example. I bought at 82, and it's now sitting at like 80.
In
And
your defense, I like TD. I think that's a great idea.
so I've averaged my price down to almost $81 flat. So almost a whole dollar down, which doesn't seem like much, but if they ever jump up to 110, then there's a couple extra bucks in my pocket, right? But I do like also the Brookfields, which I have, again, very small positions on because I don't have that much free cash flow. And my CN that I bought, also a small position that I'd like more, all three of which are up 10% for CN, 20% for the two Brookfields that I own. So I re and I really struggle because, like, as I can see, I probably won't be putting money to average down into my wheat stocks. I probably won't be putting it into my REITs right now. Those are pretty clear to me that I don't think that this is the right time because I don't see them jumping up that
You
much.
know, man, I'm almost of the opposite opinion. I think we're closer to the end of the high interest rates than we are the beginning. And I think REITs stand to benefit hugely if interest rates start to cut. And I also believe that Canada, with record immigration, do have a very real housing crisis. And right now we're kind of on this weird cusp where like interest rates are high, nobody's financing new builds, but some, not all, but some good REITs have the money to continue building through this. So they've been able to like pull away a little bit from the herd. And then as interest rates drop, those investments are going to get more and more profitable. Now, nobody knows when those interest rates will come down. I mean, who knows? Maybe they never come down. I think that's unlikely. But I do see a potential world where the good REITs start to rip a little bit. I don't know what that would look like, but like I'm very happy with holding my RioCan. I'm getting more and more comfortable with my smart centers.
All right, well, one, this doesn't help me at all. You're making this worse. Two, yes, I'm not selling anything. Okay. Like every single company I own right now, I'm holding. I've sold one company my entire career so far investing with real money. We're gonna get into that in a second. With my fake money accounts. yeah, so I'm very happy to hold my especially since most of my companies that I am holding pay me a dividend regardless. But I think there was one in particular we were talking about that we had contrasting opinions a little bit on, and that was Bell recently.
Yeah, I'm not in love with Bell.
Well, I you know, been following the news on Bell. They've been making a lot of, you know, cuts and trying to do all this kind of stuff, which reasonably because they are struggling a little bit the last couple year the year, excuse me, or a couple quarters, but the year. And I had mentioned averaging down on my Bell because they're down quite a bit. So is my TELUS. So let me just recap for a second. You're basically saying that you are in agreement with me about averaging down my price with TD and potentially the REITs, RioCan, and SmartCentres at this point.
If it was me, I mean, I'll never tell you what to buy or sell, but if it was me, I could see myself putting some money into TD. I personally wouldn't put money in RioCan because I'm way too heavy, but I love my RioCan. If you had a small position, like, I would not be mad at you for adding. Smart centers, I would probably just hang out for a bit and, like, got to see a few more quarters. They are right at the top end of their payout ratio. So we like smart centers because they pay a dividend or a distribution. Same thing. They pay us a paycheck to hold the stock, basically, and it's quite high. But the problem is when you dig into their financials, they're paying almost all of their available cash flow out to us. So, like, imagine they got an interest rate hike that they weren't expecting, or imagine a project fails, or, you know, they find out that, like, 12 of their properties need some foundation work and their expenses go up. All of a sudden, they're not going to have enough money to pay us the distribution. So what they're going to do is either cut the distribution or take out debt to make ends meet. Not a great place to be in. Right. But the last few quarters, that payout ratio has been coming down, which is a very good thing. So I personally like a bit of a margin of safety here. I would like to see that continue to come down before I add more money. But I'm happy to sit on it and hold it and just hang out and see how this shakes out for now.
So let's get down to brass tacks, because this is my real question. Mm-hmm. The little money that I've been putting into my tax-free savings account right now, we're talking $100 a month average. That's including my dividends. I've been averaging down mostly on TD has been my focus recently, because they've dipped a bit. I put in a little bit into RioCan as well. I think those are my two main ones. But I do keep in the back of my mind that I do like my Brookfields and my CN, which again are up, but I have very small positions because of the available cash I had whenever I bought them. But they jumped up right after I bought them. Mm-hmm. So I also think maybe I should be trickling money into those as well. But I get a huge boner killer thinking that I'm going to be averaging up, especially with my very small positions. I only have like $500 into CN and maybe $600 or $700 combined in both my Brookfields. So if I trickle, you know, if I trickle in $350 into Brookfield, I'm averaging right up to whatever their price is now almost.
I don't think it really matters. And also, what you have to imagine, like, depending which Brookfield you're in, but like, Brookfield's a compounding machine. You know what I mean? Like, they're.
Well, that gave me confidence. You're talking about Brookfield Asset Management and how they're, what was it? Their projections?
Yeah, they projected out to like 2028 or 29, if something like that. I forget what it was. So basically, companies will make their best estimates of kind of what their finances are going to look like over the next couple of years. And it's in their best interest to be as accurate as possible, because if they say some crazy numbers and then the time comes where like that date shows up and they didn't even come close, their stock price will absolutely collapse, right? Like, it's not a good look when you said you're going to do something and you don't do it. So, and Brookfields, they tend to have a very good track record of executing what they said they're going to execute. And they said Brookfield Asset Management, which is one of the many tentacles of Brookfield, they said they were going to have like outrageous growth in their distribution and their dividend up through whatever that date was, 2028, 2029. And I forget, I didn't really review any notes before doing this, but like off the top of my head, it was like 20% growth-ish per year, every year until that date. And I saw on Twitter, some guy actually did the math on that. And they said, like, if you buy Brookfield Asset Management stock today, which when I read this was like a few weeks ago, like if you buy it today, it was like a 3.5% yield, something like that. By that 2028, 2029 date, it would be like close to a 10% yield. So even if you're buying now, even if you're up 20%, you're still going to see tremendous growth if they're able to pull this off.
Yeah. And that gives me more confidence, but yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I don't know.
So. It's a thought, man. And honestly, like, there's no right or wrong answers in investing. Well, I mean, there's some that are more right than others, but like, you know, you won't know until it happens, right? Like, I can tell you Brookfield's the best stock on the planet. You go all in and tomorrow it just absolutely crashes and never.
I thought it happened one time.
Hey, I didn't tell you go all in.
I didn't go all in.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, I have my opinions, doesn't mean they're right. I could be completely wrong on everything I say.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fair enough. Hopefully this was enlightening to you, the listener. I guess it was a little bit for me.
Yeah. You want to talk about why I hate Bell?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's do it.
I don't hate Bell. I'm just not as confident in them as I was never that confident in them. I think I own $1,000, $1,500 position from quite a while ago, and I'm pretty sure I'm down on it quite a bit.
Probably.
I don't remember, but if I'm down, I would guess somewhere in the 10% range.
Yep.
But Bell pays a very good dividend, and they have, and that's kind of their whole thing, right? They call it a bond proxy. Most people buy it not because they expect Bell stock to go up. They just expect to get a good dividend. They expect the company to never falter in it, and they expect the company to make that dividend a little bit more every year. So that's why I bought it as an income play. But the stock's been doing kind of crappy lately, and a lot of telecoms have been because of high interest rates. Telecoms take a lot of debt to do what they do. It costs a lot of money for them to like build 5G networks, to lay fiber cable, all this stuff. So they take a lot of debt, but then when interest rates rise, well, their debt becomes very expensive for them to hold. So they make less profit, right? So right now, Bell is paying out more in dividends than they're actually making. They're taking on more debt to pay that dividend. Now, there's a number of reasons for that. So, like, I'm not necessarily saying, you know, hit the panic button and abandon ship. Really, one of the big reasons is they're at towards, like, the back end of a huge CapEx cycle, meaning they just invested ridiculous amounts of money to make a better 5 network. They've been laying 5. They just did it in front of my house, like, a year or two ago. And 5G, building out that network the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 years costs a lot of money, and they're almost done that. And when I say a lot of money, I'm talking like in the billions of dollars, billion with a B. So when you're spending that kind of money on making a better service, well, yeah, that's going to hurt your balance sheet and make it harder to pay your dividend because you're spending more than you're bringing in. But this spending should be temporary, right? Like, there will come a day, and I don't follow Bell super closely because it's not a massive position. But let's say, you know, maybe in a year or two, this is just a guess, maybe they finish that massive CapEx cycle. And then maybe at that point, instead of spending $1 billion a year, they spend like 200 million or 100 million. And then that, like right now, they're only paying a little bit more dividend than the cash flows they're bringing in. It's not like a tremendous deficit. It's not a nice deficit, but it's not like ridiculous. So imagine if you cut way down on your capital expenditures, and now you have a little bit more money to put in the dividend, all of a sudden you're profitable again until the next CapEx cycle. But the fear is, you know, what if they have to go a little bit longer on this CapEx cycle than their balance sheet can handle? And then they say, listen, this is unsustainable. We have to do something. Well, if you're the CEO of Bell and you're finding that your cash flows are less than what you're paying out, what are you going to do? Well, one thing you're going to do is you're going to start laying people off. We're seeing that. The next thing you do is start closing divisions. I wouldn't be surprised if Bell completely shuttered their media divisions. And they pretty much are. They've gutted radio. And honestly, like, it's terrible for these people. But if we were like being like robot logical decision makers, it's very simple when you take the emotion out of it. You look, are my radio stations making me money or are they costing me money? If the answer is costing, you stop doing that. You shut it down.
One of my favorite investors, Peter Lynch, has said many times in his podcast or in his books, layoffs is not necessarily a bad thing. Like, yes, it sucks for a small amount of people, but in the end, if the company itself shuts down because they didn't lay people off,
exactly,
there's a lot more jobs.
Exactly.
More.
And unfortunately, the media doesn't recognize that. Like, Bell's being vilified right now. Like, yeah. People are like, oh, they're heartless. It's like, well, it's a business decision. And like you say, it's for the greater good, right?
The greater good.
It's like what they used to do in World War II when like a battleship got like smoked and it's like hit by a U-boat and it's starting to sink. And like the sailors would like seal off a compartment to stop the whole ship from flooding and going under. And there's still people in that compartment and they would just lock them in there to drown and die. It's like absolutely heartbreaking and it's terrible. But it's like, okay, you've killed, you know, 50 dudes to save, you know, 3,000. And that's kind of what they're doing. It's a little less dramatic than that, but in essence, that's what it is, right? For the greater good.
It was pretty morbid.
Well, hey, I've listened to a lot of World War II podcasts and stuff. It's very, very morbid stuff. But that's basically what they're doing, right? But anyways, back on that train of thought. So to save money, they're going to lay people off. They're going to shutter underperforming divisions. They're going to sell assets that they can manage to get rid of and still like operate the way they need to. So like, yeah, like maybe selling their media division to someone else might be a good idea. And then all of a sudden they're not doing TV anymore, you know? But then the last thing that maybe not the last thing, but one thing they really don't want to do, but is an absolute reality is they'll cut that dividend. If they can't afford to pay the dividend because it's costing them too much money, they can either stop it completely or more likely like reduce it, cut it in half or something. But if they do that, investors are going to be pissed and they're going to sell the stock and the stock's going to eat crap.
Yeah, so they Bell has been paying and increasing their dividend, I think, and don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure it's the last 16 years.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So they really don't want to do that because it's going to hurt the stock and it's going to make a lot of investors angry.
And coincidentally, they decided to increase their dividend despite all
these things. Well, because they're on that 16-year streak, maybe something like that. That's the thing they do, right? So they make a very small dividend raise to not break the streak.
Yeah.
Because if they stopped raising it, that would raise huge red flags.
Yeah.
People are like, well, they're in trouble, you know? So anyways, this is why I don't like Bell right now. Their balance sheet isn't pretty. Their future like trajectory of growth isn't like there's better opportunities out there. Like
they're going to pay all these severances now.
And all the severances, that's going to weigh them down for like, I wouldn't be surprised if like that, like 2024 year is just hampered by this for at least half or three quarters.
They don't have great projections for the next couple of years.
Exactly. Because they got to pay all this severance. Right. So it's going to be a rough story, but the flip side is sometimes, you know, when things are looking a little bit rough, sometimes this is when opportunity is created. And if you buy Bell right now, you're yielding like, I don't know what it is, 7 or 8%.
It's high.
So if you were to buy today and everything I said doesn't happen and Bell pulls through and they come out the other end looking real good, you've just locked in a 7 or 8% per year cash payout on your investment. And that's likely going to increase every year, assuming they pull through just fine.
Because that's what they've been doing for the last 16 years.
That's right. So it's high risk, high reward. That's how I see it.
Not financial advice. and that's where I'm sitting at. So okay. So point taken, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but yeah, definitely have some opportunities I think out there. All right. So I do want to chat about my, Investopedia fake stock
simulator. Your fake money. So yeah. I'll just start with a little blurb about kind of what this is. When Jordan started learning to invest, when I dove into investing, I had no idea what I was doing. I just kind of jumped in blindly with real money and I made some very like silly mistakes off the bat. Nothing crippling or anything, but I thought, man, just not knowing what I was doing cost me some money. And when Jordan started getting into it, I learned after the fact that you can do exactly what I did, but with fake money. There are websites that allow you to, they give you like a pool of fake cash. It's all like just digital currency. And you can play the stock market. It tracks the real stock market, but with fake money. And this is just a way of like learning the mechanics and, you know, kind of testing your knowledge and know-how and just sort of learning with zero risk. So we set Jordan up with this just to kind of learn the mechanics early on in his investing career. And he made a couple of bets. So maybe you can tell the story.
Yeah. So I was paying off my debt, working my butt off doing stuff. And in retrospect, it seemed like it was taking forever. And now that I think about it, it only took 2 years. But nonetheless, in the midst of those 2 years, it's like, man, it's taking forever. All the while I'm learning about investing and seeing how great it is and hearing about my friends, Dan being one of the big ones, killing it, making all this money in my mind. So I was getting envious, jealous, all the emotions were hitting. And I'm like, man, like I really want to be investing right now. But I can't, I shouldn't, and I didn't because I was paying off this debt and that was the smartest move. So I jumped into partly Dan's advice, but other people's too that I trusted about, you know, jumping in and checking out, you know, this fake investing and how this works. So I don't know how I landed on it, but I ended up landing on Investopedia. They have a pretty decent website. They show you a lot of different basics and articles and stuff pop up. It's all free. And they had a thing called the Stock Simulator Game. So basically you make an account, your email, whatever, and you set up any parameter you want. You can start with any money you want. You can use, it uses the real stock market data. So I ended up opening up a game. I think I started with $100,000 was my cash position. And I just went to town and I just started buying companies. Now, the interesting story here for me is at the time, it was 2019 when I opened it. It was the tail end of 2019, just before COVID hit in 2020. And I had this idea in my head that I wanted to buy NVIDIA and AMD because in my mind at the time, I was trying to buy them because of their graphics card news, because I was big into computers at that time. And I was looking at building computers and doing all this stuff and graphics cards were on my mind. Okay. So here's like walk down memory lane in terms of learning. I'm thinking, oh, the new graphics cards are about to come out, and these companies are going to like kill it because they're going to be awesome. And so I'm going to buy them. And I did. I bought them with my fake money. I bought 300 shares of AMD at $44 a share. And no, 200 shares. And I bought 300 shares of NVIDIA at $144 a share. Now, little did I know, and after I made these fake purchases, I started looking into it more. Turns out that the graphics cards of both these companies are a very, very, very small portion of their business. And most of the revenues are driven by not graphics cards. And to talk specifically about NVIDIA, they're basically just processing power computer chips that they make most of their money on. It's a very complex business. There's many factors. But at the time, Trump was president and he was just destroying China and putting all these sanctions and stuff. And believe it or not, NVIDIA at the time was selling up to 80% of their business was going to China in terms of selling stuff to them, in terms of like data centers and processing power stuff and all this different stuff in terms of computer chips. Anyway, long story short, I learned a lot about these companies, figuring out that, hey, it's not just all about one thing. There's many different things in companies, and made me realize that I need to do more research. And that was part of my learning journey. Now to the fun stuff. I started real investing, completely forgot I had these fake accounts really until
literally, you have the account here on your phone.
I actually took a picture of my portfolio. So, Dan and I talked yesterday about doing this podcast, and I said it came up, NVIDIA is just killing it. Okay. So right now, NVIDIA is like the biggest market cap company in the world. They're like $3 trillion.
Bigger than Apple, really?
Yeah. Well, really? They're top three. They're top three. Yeah.
I was going to say, I'd be very surprised.
Anyway, they're huge. They just jumped up like straight rocket ship for the last 2 years. AI driven, data center driven, profits unreal. It's insane. They're just killing it. Okay. Now.
Yeah, they're bigger than Apple by market cap.
Yeah, they've been destroying it. I remember now. I don't have NVIDIA in my portfolio. I sold.
Oh, no.
And I sold because I was listening to a podcast, and the person I was listening to said, if you have 100% profit margin, consider selling. And in my fake account, I was like, fuck it. And I sold. Okay. I made a profit. But I did the math. Okay. At $144 a share, 300 shares. I put me somewhere at, maybe we can just do it quickly right now. But off the top of my head, now the shares are worth $800, almost $785, I think it is, a share. So I would have gone from $144 a share times 300 to $785 times 300. I'd be at almost $200,000 minus my initial investment.
So I did it a different way, your calculations. I did the math on how much money you bought in 2019, which you put in $43,200 in 2019.
Makes sense, yeah.
And then I followed the Google charting of it, which includes stock splits.
Yeah.
So from March 2019 to today is a 1,915% gain. You would have had $827,000 when you account for the splits. Imagine that was real money.
Where?
If you didn't sell.
Yeah. So I'd be like, yeah, just killing it.
but you sold. And this is what happened with me with Shopify.
Yeah.
Right? Same. Well, this is way more than what I would have made with Shopify. I like cashed out like a couple grand, and I would have made like 80 grand if I just held it to the peak when last time I looked at it. But this is extreme.
Yeah. So the short version of this story is I just got lucky. Like I bought on a whim, saying graphics cards, and then I would have just YOLO'd it, and then I sold because of some dumb advice. Now, in my defense, I thought this is fake money. I don't really care. I'm just going to reap up these profits. And that was almost the last time I touched that game, because then I started getting into real money and I didn't really care about it anymore. But honorable mentions on this list, and I thought some of this stuff was interesting. So I held on to these companies. The first one, which is my biggest profit maker, is AMD. I own 200 shares of AMD. I purchased them for $44 a share. I'm up 310%.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is there like dollar values of what you would have made?
$27,498 what it's worth yesterday.
And do you remember how many shares did you buy at what price?
Total value $36,320 right now. I bought 200 shares at 44.
So you initially invested $8,800.
Yeah.
It would then be worth like 30 something grand.
Yeah. I also bought Intel at the same time at $61 a share. They are down 30%, which I have not been following Intel that closely, but that I thought was interesting. Lululemon I purchased.
That's an interesting one.
Day up, because it's up 124% in my portfolio. $200 a share is what I bought them at. They are at 455 now.
Nice.
MasterCard I bought.
Oh, that would be a good one.
15 shares at 338. It's up 40%. Qualcomm I bought, only up 7%. TELUS I bought, down 21%. I bought a lot of TELUS. And Waste Management I bought, and it is also up 84%. So overall, my portfolio overall is up 87%, which is not too shabby. That's without NVIDIA.
Hey.
Now, if I would have had NVIDIA...
Oh, hey, you know what? I did something wrong on my calculator. Your NVIDIA wouldn't have been 800,000.
I didn't think so.
You were correct. Yeah.
200,000. It was just under 200,000.
Yeah, I just did this. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, okay. I think my original purchase price was like 40,000 almost, and I would have been up to 200, almost 200,000. Yeah.
Weh.
Yeah. Still pretty sweet.
That is very sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, I thought that was interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Funny when you look back, eh? You like back check the things you've done.
And I was playing around with it again, and they made it like more simple. It was a little complex before. It took me a bit to figure it out, especially as a beginner. But they made it a little more flashy, so it's kind of cool. I was playing with it a little bit.
I often daydream about when I backtrack, like back check my current holdings 10 years from now, what that's, you know, how, like, which ones will I be like, damn, and which ones will I be like, I'm an idiot.
Yeah, well, that's right. Like those... I don't own any of those companies except for TELUS in real life. But like that was in the end of 2019. So we're looking at almost 5 years ago. Right. And like I found Intel was interesting as down 30%. Like that was not one I would expect to be down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Albeit I haven't looked into them all that closely, but
the one I think that I could very well be super surprised with in 10 years is my EQ Bank stock.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised to back check that one, and like, you know, maybe down the road it either gets acquired or does some acquiring and ends up being something way more than it is today. And I wouldn't be surprised to be like, holy shit. But you never know.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I had a couple of other things on our list to talk about, but we're kind of hitting close to that time and it's like completely different subjects, so I think maybe we could wait for another episode and get a little more meat and potatoes in it.
Sure.
So I am good to wrap this one up if you are okay with that.
Yeah, I think I am also good to wrap this one up.
Nice. I am super confident in my TD now, though. I definitely want to put some more money in there. But
yeah, TD, sweet. I could see some opportunities. I mean, we have seen opportunities in the American banking sector, and TD is pretty big in the US. And TD has a lot of cash. And when you've got some smaller or like mid-sized banks struggling in America, that gives opportunity for, you know, TD to be like the vulture looking for a carcass there, and you could just swoop in and get some sweet deals.
Yeah.
We haven't seen a whole lot of it yet, but I could see them potentially doing that. And that would be super cool for them. But yeah, I have decently high hopes for TD. I like TD.
So unfortunate news for us. Well, fortunate, unfortunate. We have up till the end of 2026 making double RESP payments to take advantage of the grants. So meaning that we won't have that, you know, $400-ish in free cash flow, but good that we're investing it and taking advantage of that quote unquote free money by the government.
Mm-hmm.
The other benefit in our lives right now is that Mel is in a new position that pays a little more money, and that's going to start in the next couple of weeks, the raise.
Sweet.
And I will also be getting a raise in about a month. So hopefully we can trickle in some more money to our TFSA into the market, but we are heavily saving for our trip to Portugal. So
nice.
There's that. All in all is good.
Yep. But also you got your big fat money basics bonus coming. So
with our millions of followers and viewers and listeners.
That's right. And our EQ Bank and Wealthsimple sponsorships.
Wouldn't that be sweet?
Wouldn't it?
I am wearing a t-shirt with the Money Basics logo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to take a picture of it and post it on Instagram when I say new episode out now.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Right on. All right. Well, I think that's it.
Yep.
Thanks everybody for listening. And I guess we'll catch you on the next one.
Yep. Sounds good. And for the two followers that stopped following us,
Go to hell.
All right, ciao.